all life on the planet is a product of evolution. There are
a product.
There are other like types of evolution. There's stellar evolution, cosmic evolution, whatever. There's the rock cycle.
So do everything you see in the world is a product of evolution? There cannot be any other way around that. Is that what you think?
If by evolution you mean the product of interaction and change, then yeah.
Yeah, so I guess my suggestion is, could you accept that there could be interferences with it? Or is it just a smooth process that always occurs?
The TV's too loud, dude. But also, I don't know what you mean. Like, could something what's interfering with it? Like, the formation of stars is interrupted by what? Something else in nature? Or Maxwell's demon? Or
I would suggest that. I was going to suggest that because I think that I lean towards there being intelligent design. Therefore, this stoned ape theory or this idea that potentially magic mushrooms could have interfered with.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
downloading. No, I know. It's way out there, but it's illogical for me that, we were just chimps and we basically walked out the jungle, picked up a tool, and now we have everything that we see. It's like, okay, yeah, we've got big brains and stuff, but like that's for me quite an illogical jump.
You're being super biased here, because if you were an alien, so like you agree that humans were living hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Sure. So 300,000 years ago, when some of the very earliest Homo sapiens were around, they weren't doing anything that much different than Homo erectus was doing, than Neanderthals were doing, than the other human species we coexisted with. So if you were an impartial observer, an alien, and you came to Earth back then, and you looked around and you looked at the subhuman species of cavemen over there, the subhuman species of cavemen over there, and the subspecies of human cavemen in this spot, you'd look at three different ones. I actually don't think you'd have to watch them for like literally hundreds of years, I feel like, in order to be like,
yeah,
I think this one's the most likely one to be successful. So we actually weren't doing anything really actually all that impressive. None of it predicts what we're doing now, which is pretty wild.
No. It's the size of the brain. Got anything to do with it? Like we were just
no. It's almost certainly the way the brain is wired, because Neanderthals had bigger brains than us, but they had bigger bodies than us too. Right. From what I remember, the brain to body ratio is actually the same, but they, for whatever reason, were just wired differently. You can think of it like this happens in humans today. Like there are some people that are neurodivergent in some way, and it makes their brains unthinkably good at doing arithmetic or music or art or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just a weird quirk.
Well, I have,
and we happen to
have something neurodivergent. So yeah.
Yeah, me too. We happened to have some sort of like on average neural wiring differently than Neanderthals that just made us better at what I think is probably some kind of just abstract reasoning, because what we see in Neanderthals is they made tools, like they made sophisticated tools. When you compare us to them in the early ages, you look at our arrowheads, our knives, whatever, they're kind of indistinguishable. For whatever reason, Neanderthals basically didn't evolve their tool set really at all. Whereas we really did. We'll never be able to know this, but it's possible that social interactions were that way too. Like they almost certainly spoke and had grammar and could communicate. But there may have been an organizational aspect to the way humans form clusters that made it so we could form bigger groups. There's an upper limit. It turns out to be about 200 humans. Yeah. That's about as big as a nomadic or hunter-gatherer or whatever group of humans can really functionally be. Maybe they couldn't go past 10 or 15 or 50 or something like that. Well, that would give us a huge advantage, right? And then something about, because we can see that we change our tool set over time, what that means is we pass on culture and ideas. And they just couldn't do that like we do.
Right, okay. So are you open then, because it's abstract and we're not entirely sure, that, you know, your third eye, essentially your pineal gland, is an antenna for receiving information, light codes, whatever you want to call it, that these mushrooms that we were foraging for,
the mushrooms.
It kind of could...
The stone ape hypothesis?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been the Joe Rogan podcast, and there have been
people. back in the 2017 days when his podcast was actually kind of good. Paul Stamets, the idea behind that was, it's a very goofy kind of version of the cooked meat access to protein hypothesis, which is it fueled brain development. The idea behind this is, well, it basically woke up their imagination and made them more brave. It inspired them to have ideas about nature, about manipulating nature, about perhaps social interactions or whatever. I'm sure there's more to it that I just can't remember, but it really seems really stupid because the kind of mushrooms they're talking about only grow next to a certain animal feces. So you would just have to imagine, like humans lived across a pretty broad array, and this would have happened, I guess, pretty early on when our population was small. But it just seems...
Yeah, I wish I could...
It just seems too ridiculous.
Sorry, I wish I could remember, you know, there was scientists and really interesting people that were talking about how they, I don't want to call them aliens, but how they were kind of interacting with entities. And I potentially think that because the third eye is an antenna, they were maybe giving us information from an outside source. I'm not going to say where.
Wait, you mean like aliens or something? Like contacting?
I don't know about aliens. I just think I like to lean to the side that there is intelligent design behind the world and stuff. And
well, I mean,
I don't know about aliens.
You're not really going to find that in the pineal gland.
Like
we understand the pineal gland evolutionarily pretty darn well. It has photoreceptors in it, but it's inside your skull. It's like, what the, that doesn't make any sense. Well, a lot of amphibians and reptiles have a parietal eye. It's a single, it's on top of their head.
Yeah.
All it does is detect light. It can't actually form images, but in a very primitive life form, it probably would have been something to regulate circadian rhythms, for example. And the pineal gland in us still does that. It just mediates it not through direct contact with photons.
Yes. I was going to say it picks up light, which is correct. It does. But light only makes up 0.005% of the spectrum of electromagnetic frequencies or waves, essentially. And you probably know about dark matter and stuff like that. There's a lot that we can't see, that we don't know what it might be picking up. So that makes me think that I'm open to this kind of stuff. I was going to say something else. I can't remember now. Yeah. And also Göbekli Tepe is a very well-made, blocks of a massive and it goes against any logical reasoning that we could actually pick up a tool and do that kind of stuff. And that's like 10,000 years old.
The real archaeologists, that's not what they think about it. Hunter-gatherers had huge amounts of free time. Göbekli Tepe is pretty well understood by mainstream archaeologists who don't go on podcasts except Flint Dibble that one time. But no, it's pretty well understood that that was the product of a hunter-gatherer culture. And there's a lot of stuff about it that is said that there's no supporting evidence of it. Like, it was deliberately buried rapidly. And it's like, no, we don't actually have good direct evidence of that. And there are all these claims that they're covering up the unburial site. No, there's like literally there's a, I don't know if it's an olive orchard or something, the hill it's on. There's a farmer, like he owns the land, it's private land. And there's literally a contract that says, yep, in these years, we're going to slowly remove the orchard on it so that we can start doing further excavations. But yeah, look up either Flint Dibble or Mini Minuteman on YouTube. They do really good, rigorous academic archaeology instead of like pop archaeology, like the I'm just asking questions type stuff, which...
Yeah, I'm not familiar with how it was buried or that kind of thing. But it would also, it would suggest that the pyramid, to have all these calculations in it, would show a sign of information being given to them. Or like, you know, like Pythagoras wasn't discovered, but somehow it's in the pyramid. It's within the... it's within the calculations that they've worked out.
The Babylonians discovered the Pythagorean theorem way before Pythagoras did. Let me look up, did Egyptians know about the Pythagorean theorem?
Well, it makes sense because it's Pythagoras that discovered it. It's called the Pythagorean theorem.
It was independently discovered by Pythagoras, probably actually just by his cult. I wrote about him in a book I wrote. He's a very weird individual. He had a religious cult and they basically worshipped numbers. So he kind of like, it was sort of the equivalent of like being the head honcho of a research institution. Like, it's your graduate students and your underlings that are probably actually doing the discoveries, but like you probably are the most gifted and like you run the thing, but no, the Babylonians knew about the Pythagorean theorem. It looks like, it looks like the Egyptians, like they understood right angles, but maybe they didn't like formalize it into, actual like arithmetic or anything.
Okay.
But all that other stuff about like you can find number patterns emerging out of the Great Pyramid, that all is just you can find patterns if you look desperately enough for them. And what's really weird about it is it always involves mixing up units that would have meant absolutely nothing at all to the Egyptians. It's like if you take how many feet tall it is or meters tall it is times like the circumference radius of Earth or something, like you can divide and get these ratios. It's like, but if you do it in cubits, it doesn't work. And if you do it in, I don't know, whatever else, it also doesn't. So we're just arbitrarily picking something.
One fact that I found really interesting is that the height of it is like the median height of all the highs and lows of the Earth or something like that. The average height
which again is just, but did you know that that's not true of the Eiffel Tower? It's like,
well,
It's like, why are we picking this random
because
thing?
Because it's a landmark, isn't it? It's the seven wonder of the world.
Yeah, but that doesn't actually make it special. Like, you know how the moon, sometimes it doesn't. There are annular eclipses, but you know how the moon like perfectly eclipses the sun?
Yes. Yeah.
So I've had several flat earthers tell me that that can't be a coincidence. It's like, but it can be a coincidence if I stand a certain distance away from any two objects, they perfectly eclipse each other. Therefore, whatever, you know, it's just not that special.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's all I had to say. I mean, I would probably leave you saying that like most ancient cultures would believe that the earth believe that the earth was a dome and was kind of flat. But I haven't done research on that, so I'm not sure. I mean,
it was a very popular idea to ancient Near East cultures. Yeah.
Yeah, and most cultures, I think, at least 30 big ones anyway. And yeah, that's all I was going to say. Thank you very much.
No, you don't need 8 glasses of water a day. Yes, dogs do sweat. No, coal doesn't turn into diamonds. I've compiled hundreds of bits of information like that in Facts That Aren't True. Get your signed copy by going to the link in the description.
Question quickly, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's the point. What's up?
I just wanted to know, like, say if you were in a dire situation, would you, like, pray even if you didn't believe in it? Like, would you find comfort in that anyway?
Not in praying, no. I mean, I would do the equivalent of what people do when they pray, but I wouldn't be asking God. I would just ask for help, deliverance from the situation, to make it stop, for the paramedics to show up, for something. But I wouldn't say, okay, on the off chance that you do exist, will you please help me? And I'll severely apologize for all the times I said you weren't real. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. I was only asking because, like, I'm an atheist myself as well. But there's been situations where I've, like, you know, been out of hope. And I've just sat there like, God help me. Lord, just do something. And I just got a bit of comfort from that. Even though I don't believe in it, I think just saying that, I suppose, helped a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of impossible to psychoanalyze yourself, but I mean, I guess the question would be, what are you actually hoping for? You're just hoping that the situation changes. You're not hoping that God is actually real. It's just, I can't think of anything that would make this go away except God. And what I want is for this thing, whatever it is, to go away. But That would be my suspicion.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to know if a situation did come up like that, would you, like, even if you didn't believe in it, would you say, God help me or something?
No, I wouldn't, no. I mean, it's funny, well, I say stuff like, God damn it, and like, oh my God, and stuff like I just say it because it's just so
trivial.
Yeah, it's just what you say, right? Like, most of us don't think about why we say what we say. I think we're all kind of Chinese, we're all Chinese room subjects. We just learned this is what you say when you hear these words. I was thinking about this yesterday, actually. I was like, how many of the words I use do I know the actual definition of? Probably not all that many. Like, I was reading a book the other day and it used the word recalcitrant. And I was like, I have no clue what that means, but I see people use that word every now and then, but I have no idea what it means. And I was thinking, like, when was the last time I used a word? And if somebody would have been like, do you know what that means? I would have had no idea. But I just think to myself, Well, I just know that it works for this idea I'm trying to convey here, right? So, yeah, that's kind of how I think about, some of the words I use every now and then, or like phrases I use.
Another really good example of that is like contradiction. Like a lot of people don't know the definition of contradiction, but they'll use it outhandedly in a situation where they think a contradiction has happened.
Yeah, I mean, there can be, like in logic, a contradiction is when you like pose like P and not P. But like more commonly, a contradiction is just when you believe in two things that can't both possibly be true, which is the same thing, but not exactly the same thing, also, but.
Yeah, I mean, the technical definition of a contradiction is when the assertion and the negation are proposed to be true at the exact same time.
Yes.
But like a lot of people would just be like, if you say, this was really good, but it's really bad, people would say, well, you're just contradicting yourself, when you can have like a split opinion on something as well.
Yeah, well, that just sounds like sarcasm, but.
No, I mean, people will say like, oh yeah, I really like this food, but then at the same time, I didn't really like it. You know, people say like, it was kind of good, but at the same time, it was kind of bad. You know, people like use that kind of like phrase.
That sounds like somebody just trying to be polite. That sounds like lying. Socially acceptable lying. Want to learn how to make people do this?
I'm angry because you're a little f***ing weasel, and I want to f***ing slap you. That's why I'm angry. I'm gonna get a little bit triggered when you f***ing treat me like I'm an idiot when I know way more than you do.
This book will be your guide. I debunk all of the common anti-scientific arguments, plus some uncommon ones. Every single copy is personally signed and shipped by me. There's even an audiobook. Link in the description.
I should, get some sleep because I'm gonna work tomorrow, but well, fuck it.
No, yeah, lots of women find me irresistible. I can
Yeah.
understand.
You actually look kind of like one of my exes. I thought about it just now with your beard, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Okay, don't send this to my boyfriend.
Probably not a compliment.
Well, yeah, well, he's kind of good looking, He's kind of goofy, but yeah. No, I'm actually an atheist as well, and I have had lives like yours on my TikTok before, but I stopped because I got so effing mad that I just got so frustrated and just, wanted to cuss everyone out, and yeah, well, that's not good for my reputation. But one thing I always find when I debate like Christians, because like that's most of them are Christians, is when they can't answer my logical questions, they go to these extreme like metaphorical metaphysics and try to confuse me. And they try to like, oh, but yeah, the time works like this, and then in like I mean, they just like try to confuse me and go into extreme detail on like
Yeah.
physics and stuff, and I don't fucking know what to say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're doing what I call philosophistry, which is kind of
Yeah.
funny. I'm thinking about making a video sometime talking about, so there's this idea called horseshoe theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before. But it's when, so like a horseshoe, the ends of the horseshoe can be like really close to each other. So horseshoe theory is when two people that are on opposite ends of an idea end up horseshoeing, and so you become so extreme in one idea that you start to resemble the opposite side.
Yeah, you go so far right
Yeah,
that you become left.
yes, something like that. And it's like philosophy has become that nowadays because 2,500 years ago, Socrates and Plato, they got inspired to form schools of philosophy and debate because there were these people that actually called themselves sophists. And a big part of what they did was they just coached people in how to be really good at rhetoric for persuasive. They did other things, but one of the big things was they coached people on how to be really persuasive in rhetoric, which is not to say that they were on the side of truth. It was just to be really persuasive in rhetoric. And it caused a lot of people, especially educated people or people that at least thought a lot, because there was no such thing as really like formal education or like state education. But this caused a lot of consternation with them because they're like, these people are being dishonest, but they're very good at rhetoric and they are gaining power by doing this. And just as an intellectual, it's just makes me sick. And so they sought to combat that. And so schools of philosophy were developed, not like in order to combat sophistry, but that was one of the reasons that they did it. And now we've got to the point where now the people, the Phil bros and the philosophistrists, or whatever we're going to call them, are now using philosophical, like extremely esoteric language to just try to confuse people and define things into existence in confusing ways. And so they've lost the plot. They've horseshoed their way back to sophistry. And it's just, it's actually kind of funny and really pathetic. And so I share in your frustration. So what do? You can just simply, you can be reflective and think about it. You can do your research and to figure out what they're trying to say. Like, you can try to decode all of their bullshit so you can know how to deal with it. Or you can just ignore them. So you can either meet them where they're at and battle them. I do that with a varying degree of success. Or you can just be, or we can just basically ostracize them. You know, you pick whatever works best for you, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's just like I understand that they use this method to confuse me and to like put me off track, and then they can say, oh, so you don't know about this, then how can you say you know anything about that? And like, it's so much deeper than you understand. And I'm like, no, it's not. You're just trying to confuse me. And I feel like I can't study every little thing that they might bring up because I have no idea who these people are or what they have studied. Or, you know, I could just call them out on like being, yeah, these Phil bros. And, you know, but it feels like they think that they win when they do this. And that's what makes me so frustrated because I'm just like, you're
well,
just
that's the point. To them, their idea of being successful or winning or whatever is to just create confusion. And so you can just point out to them, like, let's say I don't know what you're talking about. Have you actually proven anything other than that? Have you contributed to knowledge in any way? No, you haven't. And so there are ways of calling them out on that. To what degree it'll make any difference, I don't know. They're just, they just have this weird perversion for doing that, so.
Yeah, because obviously they feel like they're winning, so then they will just keep doing it. But it's frustrating when, you know, even when I don't have lives about me being an atheist, I'm an artist and I can have lives with me painting, and then they come and because they know I've talked about this before. Oh, and they are just weird. Like, hey, aren't you the atheist girl? I'm just, oh my God, let me paint. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if they get off of that or something, but they obviously feel like they're winning something and then they just keep doing it because it makes them feel good, I guess.
Get a free book, 2 free audiobooks, and ad-free videos by becoming a Patreon member.